Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. There are few people in Missouri who know more about the state's campaign finance system than Liz Ziegler. Ziegler most recently was the executive director of the Missouri Ethics Commission, the governmental entity responsible for enforcing the state's complicated slate of campaign finance and ethics laws. And getting a handle on the Byzantine set of donation rules is no easy task, especially after the implementation of a 2016 constitutional amendment requiring donation limits for candidates. Ziegler joins us now to answer a slew of listener questions about Missouri's campaign finance system and the future of the Missouri Ethics Commission. Liz, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Can you explain what the Missouri Ethics Commission is for people who may not have heard of it before?
Yeah, sure. The Ethics Commission, and we have these in just about every state, is a state office that regulates state campaign finance laws for both state and local candidates. So when they're running in state elections, they file with us. The reports are available on our website. And we also have enforcement power to receive complaints and enforce those laws. But we also, and I'll be, as I've left the commission, I'll be saying we. It's been pretty recent. But the commission also regulates conflict of interest laws for public officials, as well as personal financial disclosure. So there's a lot that the commission does.
And you mentioned enforcement. And our first question is from Sammy J. Kramer on Instagram. Does the Missouri Ethics Commission take the initiative to investigate issues on their own, or do they only investigate when complaints are made?
That's a great question. And there's really two parts to that. So first, the answer is, if it's a campaign finance law, we can audit the reports. In other areas, we have to have a complaint. So it really depends on what the issues are.
And one of the challenges the Missouri Ethics Commission has had in recent months is having a quorum to adjudicate ethics cases. But as I'm sure you know and are about to explain, appointing people to the commission is more challenging than other gubernatorially appointed boards. Can you explain what's been going on in recent months?
Sure. So the commission is governed by six commissioners. They are appointed through a party affiliation of three Democrats and Republicans, but they serve for 4 years. So every 2 years, there's going to be a turnover of three commissioners. And the method by which that happens is that the congressional districts present names to the governor of eligible individuals, and then the governor appoints, the Senate confirms. And so, you know, in recent months, yes, we did not have a quorum. Every 2 years in March, there's going to be a period of time in which we're looking for three commissioners. But this last time, the challenge was the fact that there was a vacancy and there was also, you know, a health issue. So while we're used to not having quorums, this was a longer period of time for that reason. But the rules really are very specific in terms of who may serve. And, you know, even a year after the commissioner served, they're really not able to make campaign contributions and do certain things.
And since you started working for the Ethics Commission, you have seen a lot of changes, especially in campaign finance laws. Lawmakers removed campaign donation limits in 06, and then the Missouri Supreme Court placed them back on in 07.
Yeah.
And then lawmakers removed them again in 2008 before Missouri voters approved a donation limit constitutional amendment in 2016. How difficult is it for regulators like you to keep track of all these changes?
Well, yeah. I mean, it has been a bit of a whirlwind because, again, back in the 2006 to 2008 setting, it was really kind of back and forth. I think that in terms of the changes, some of the challenges that we have seen in more recent times, 2016 and beyond, is that there were changes in the law through the voters of the people, which is fine, but we had to then really interpret those laws, get the word out very quickly. There was some confusion. I think while a lot of people focus on the campaign contribution limits that came on 2016, I think a bigger part of that law was for the first time we had prohibitions on candidates, such as candidates could no longer receive direct contributions from corporations and unions. Candidate committees could not give money to other candidate committees. Candidate committees could not give to PACs. So, for example, if a candidate terminated, they could not then be giving money to a PAC that they may have a piece of. So getting that information out, I would say, was more of a challenge because we're trying to educate people. And these changes, while the contribution limits in 2016 only applied at the state level, the prohibitions applied to everyone. And so, again, just being on top of it, interpreting it, getting the word out.
I would argue that one of the shortcomings of the 2016 constitutional amendment is it caps donations for candidates, but not to political action committees. And in fact, I remember having a conversation with you about this. Apparently, candidates can go to a fundraiser for a PAC that's like run by their friend and tell donors, give as much as you want to this PAC, as long as like they don't control what the PAC actually does. Is there anything that anybody could do about that? Or is that just the reality based off of like U.S. Supreme Court decisions, basically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it is the reality. I will say that I have heard from really many candidates that when they're going to run for office, they're pretty much told this is how much money it will cost to run. And so the money is going to flow one way or the other. And, I mean, you are correct. Once limits came back and the PACs could receive the unlimited contributions, we saw a very big increase, obviously, in PACs and PACs that supported the candidates. And so that really is the system that we now have.
Living First 1185 on Reddit asks, I would like it addressed how even though legislators have very small limits on gifts, how thousands of dollars can be funneled into PACs with anonymous donors who can't be discovered under MEC filing reports. So I think Living First 1185 is alluding to 501c4s, which don't have to disclose their donors, and how they've been affecting Missouri politics both before and after the campaign donation limit amendment passed. Why are 501c4s allowed to operate in Missouri without disclosing their donors?
Yeah, that's another great question. So the 501c4s are not non-for-profit corporations, and they're regulated really by the IRS in terms of what political activity they can do. So what occurs is, in terms of the campaign finance law, is the question becomes, if that 501c4, that not-for-profit, is actually operating as a campaign finance committee, if they're falling within the definition. And that is a very, very difficult area, because essentially what would have to be proven is that that is all that they are doing. Now, I will say some years ago, and it had to do with when medical marijuana was on the ballot, there was a 501c4 and a PAC, and essentially it formed. And the whole idea of it was to give money to the PAC and not disclose the donors. And the case is on the website. I don't remember the exact. But, you know, that was a case where we were able to prove that its primary purpose was to support the initiative petition. And so it can happen, but that's really the reason, is when people think of 501c4s, they may be associations that people all are giving to. The question is how much political activity they have and what their purpose is.
We have more questions about the role of political action committees in Missouri politics. Play TMFUS on Reddit asks, how can a PAC associated with a candidate end up paying that candidate's legal bills without being seen as a coordination? And Play TMFUS pointed to, I guess, a situation with soon-to-be former House Speaker Dean Plocker as an example of this. Can you address this point? Because I think that this is top of mind based off that particularly recent example.
Okay. And, you know, I can't really comment on that specific example. I don't even know that I could, I know enough about that. But I will say, and this could be really, you know, a challenge for many people, the campaign finance law, and it's the law, is very broad. There's a lot that can happen because it's allowed to happen. And so in a situation where a political action committee is seeking to, let's say, pay legal bills, it becomes a question of, and it's kind of what you said before, is there coordination with the candidate? Now, because if they're paying the legal bills, I mean, their argument could be, well, we're supporting this individual as a candidate or an office holder. The question becomes whether the payment of those legal bills is a contribution, which is subject to campaign finance limits. And that goes to that question of coordination. So I hope that makes sense. I don't know enough, but, you know, that's the kind of things that you would ask.
SJS67 on X. We have a lot of users with complex usernames for this segment. How is it ethical for Governor Parson to continue to have Steve Tilley raise money for his PAC so he can play kingmaker for the state for years to come? Now, let's take aside this particular example. It is not uncommon at all for candidates to have open candidate committees long after they've stopped running. Like, my favorite example is Democrat Steve Goss still, I think, has an open candidate committee with like $45,000 in it, and he hasn't run in 25 years. So can you kind of explain like why this is allowed to happen, not just for that specific example, but in general?
Yeah. So the law provides that if, and it sometimes feels a little unfair, if a candidate is unsuccessful, they have to terminate their committee. Okay, so you start there. If a candidate, an office holder, has been successful, they can keep their committee open with the thought process that perhaps in the future they may run again. I mean, the law allows that to happen. Now, they're going to have to continue to file reports. They are going to have to spend money for campaign purposes. But again, you know, that's one of those areas that the law allows to happen if somebody has been in office. I can tell you personally to everyone, we would reach out to a number of these committees and say, you know, just a reminder that these are your requirements, and would you like to terminate? If not, you don't have to, but, you know, we understand that.
Are there any other examples as extreme as the Gaw case where there's been like an open candidate committee for 25 years, even though it's clear like that person's not going to run again? Mm-hmm. Or is that like a really, really extreme example?
Oh, I think, in again, I think there's a few out there that are like that. Why they're choosing to stay open, I can't say. I mean, it's kind of a headache for them. But there are others, I will tell you. And I know every couple of years we will be reaching out to people. And, you know, one thing that happens is they also are not required to give an election date, a future election date. Well, that cuts off their ability to really be getting reminders and information. So it does happen, and we do try to keep an eye on it, and they have to be using the committee for legitimate purposes, and essentially, you know, under the law. And I'm not suggesting that they're not, but most of those committees pretty much seem dormant. You don't see activity. They just remain open.
Are there times then when they may not comply because they just don't respond to you? Or do they often respond and then like file their reports basically in the last 30 seconds?
Okay. There are a lot of people that do not answer us, and it is a really big mistake because they're not getting the information, and it really does come into trouble for them in the future because they quit filing reports and doing things. But yeah, we try. They need to listen to us, and they need to follow the directions.
Yeah, listen to Liz Ziegler on this if you're a candidate committee. Follow directions.
Yeah.
Or there will be trouble. Liz Ziegler is the former executive director of the Missouri Ethics Commission, which oversees the state's campaign finance and ethics laws. Liz, thank you so much for joining us on the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Right. Thank you.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.